So the challenges of life can be very difficult, and at times we can feel like we love God, we want to obey God, but we doubt what God's doing in our life when we're in the midst of a trial. So let's take a look at that as we go through the sermon here today. First, let's just define a few of our terms. We're going to talk about faith, what that is. In the Greek, it's pistis, P-I-S-T-I-S. And it, in general, means, you can give a long definition, but you can get lost in definitions. The truthfulness of God, that's faith. You trust in the truthfulness of God, in other words. You have an assurance, that's another way of putting it, an assurance, a belief or a belief, faith or fidelity. Just so you get the feeling, you get the sense of that word in the Greek. Let's go to Matthew 14 as we start. Matthew, the 14th chapter. We really, really enjoy being in small churches. We were, like I said, in Lubbock for 18 years, and I think we might have had 35, 38 as an average towards the last few years. And then we had about another 70 or so spread out all over from Roswell, New Mexico, to Odessa, to Amarillo, part of Oklahoma at one time. So I used to kid, I had half the United States, and a fellow that works from one half of New Mexico to Utah, they get the other half of the United States. So our areas were huge, but there weren't a lot of people. Anyway, let's get on with this. Matthew 14, verse 23. Matthew 14 and verse 23. And when it had been sent the multitudes away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea. So remember, his disciples got in the boat there in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And that is not unusual for that particular body of water. Storms can come up real quickly. Now in the fourth watch in the night, Jesus went to them walking on the water. And when the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were troubled, saying, and they were terrified, "Is it a ghost?" And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Behold, be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." So it's interesting that when you look at the word "it is I" and those words in the Greek, he says, in a sense, what it was conveying was, I'm a physical human being, it's really me. That's what the Greek sort of implies there. "Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, said, "Lord, if it is you," so still some question in his mind, "command me to come to you on the water." Dear old Peter, you know, type A personality type person. So he said, "Come." And Jesus, and when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. And he cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "Oh, you have absolutely no faith." Doesn't say that, does it? It says, "Oh, you of little faith. Why did you doubt?" And the word "doubt" is in Greek here means, why did you waver in opinion? Does that sound familiar? We read in 1 Kings where, remember, let's go to 1 Kings 18:20. We see that same thought here, 1 Kings. So he's sort of had a different opinion of 1 Kings. I'm looking for Isaiah. 1 Kings 18. 1 Kings 18 and verse 21. And Elijah came to all the people and said, "How long will you falter," or an old King James, "halt? How long will you falter between two opinions?" We'll see the same thought of what Jesus was saying to Peter. If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people answered him not a word. So he says, you're halting between two opinions. And that's really what Jesus was saying to Peter. Why did you halt between two opinions? I told you to come. You started coming. And then in your mind, you saw all the sea and all that going on, and you began to focus on that. Your focus got off me and onto the trial and the trauma that you're going through. Let's go back now to Matthew, where we were. He was, if you will, halting between two opinions. Okay. Now, Matthew 14, we'll just pick it up again so we can read that with these things in mind. Excuse me. 14, and I'm going to pick it up in verse 31. And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith." He didn't say he didn't have any faith. He said he had little faith. Why did you doubt? Why did you have two opinions? Why did you waver? Well, my wife and I are talking about this coming up. Jesus is Jesus, and he can do that without wavering. I'm a little on Peter's side, frankly. You know, if any of you have walked on water lately, then I'd like to talk to you. But in other words, why did you get your mind off that? Why did you break your focus? So the lesson is still for all of us here. And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And then so things went on. Let's go now to James 1. So really, there's a huge lesson here for us. Is it that we should walk on water? No. If God wants to do that and so forth, well, that's his business. He'll show us the time or the need. But James, let's go to James. My fingers don't work real well, so it takes me a little time to get there. James 1. James 1, and I'm going to start in verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Human nature being what it is, that's counterintuitive, isn't it? Do we get up in the morning and say, "I hope a truck runs over me"? No, we don't do that. Why should we count it all joy? What is he talking about here? Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Now, so he's saying here, get perspective. When you're in the middle of a trial and a difficulty, get perspective. There's a flow, if you will, to these words, and what I try to do is outline them, if you will, and I'll do that for you here in just a minute. Let me read to you what the complete word study dictionary says here about this word. I'll just read it to you from a modern translation so you get a better feel for it. James is saying that we must not come to the point of wavering from our walk with God. Okay, so when we're in the midst of a trial, and whatever that may be, if it's a health trial or other kind of trial, when we're in the midst of it, we can waver at times. And we can, another way of putting it, we can doubt God. Or what does that mean? We know God exists. We have repented. We follow God. We want to obey God. We love God. We want to do what's right. And yet, this has come upon us. Now, there's two kinds of people, and this is just a very big generality, but for our purposes, I think it will work. In a book called Doubting My Faith by James Burns, he wrote, "Usually our trials," I'm quoting him here, "usually our trials come in the form of an intellectual struggle or emotional struggle." Now, neither one is wrong, but due to the kind of personality we may have, the kind of background we have, you may look at it from more of an intellectual struggle. I think of Mr. Armstrong, he did both. But when he first started, you recall when his wife started keeping this crazy Saturday's church thing, and he thought that was crazy, and all the churches can't be wrong, and who keeps Sunday, so how can all the churches be wrong, and the one that you're keeping right? So he went into the Bible. What was he doing? He was studying it from an intellectual point of view, but he had enough respect for it that when he read it, he started seeing things. Of course, God had to open his mind to see it. And as he did, then there was that, and there was a little emotional part of it too. He had to get his wife out of that cult. See? And so he was driven to do that. But then when he started to study it, now he's beginning to understand, and that understanding comes from God. Then a conviction came over him, and he says, whoa, you're right. What was he saying? He was saying, I'm studying the Word. I don't know a lot about it, but I believe what I'm seeing, and I can believe with my eyes. Of course, again, God has to give understanding. And it says, Sabbath is the day of rest, the Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. Uh-oh, the wife's right. Okay, then what did he do? Then he, with as much, if you will, zeal, we can say emotion, he said, we have to do this. We have to do this. So he kind of approached it that way. Others were approaching it from a little different perspective. So that's just an example of how someone with an intellectual point of view would study something. We had a member in Lubbock. We had a tumor in his brain. It wasn't cancer, but it was a fast-growing tumor, and it would take various functions away from him. And so he's an engineer by training. So what kind of learner do you think he is? Intellectual. He's faithful, but he learns. So what did he do? He got the medical books, because remember now, he's a technical engineer. He thinks in these ways. And pretty soon he can talk to you like a doctor would. All of the different phrases and terminologies he would have. He understood that. He didn't try to be a doctor, but he understood it. He could talk to you about it. So that's how he learned. But then he experienced the emotional aspect of it as he went through that experience with the surgery and so forth and so forth. And so as you go back through that, and I know many of you, all of us from one time or another, have had our health challenges. And when you're going through it, it's no fun. And when you're going through it, you may feel like, why is God allowing this to happen? Why does God let this happen to me? Now I'm talking more about the emotional type person who reads the Bible. Again, neither one are wrong. But this is how people generally, I'm giving it a generalization, they'll say, why do I have to go through this? Translated, I've tried to be a good Christian. I've tried to obey God. And now I'm going through this horrible, whatever trial it may be, health trial, marriage trial, you name it. And it just doesn't seem right. So what do? You seek counsel. Then you seek God's word, more understanding. So what you're doing now is you do that. The emotional part is there. Why? And as we're obedient and submissive to the Spirit of God, as he teaches us through more study of the Bible, you start going, oh, it is in there. And now with this thing that I'm experiencing, boy, that makes a whole lot more sense than it did to me 6 months ago. I mean, I always believed it, but it makes more sense to me now. Oh, okay. Now, is this a fun trial? No. But you know what? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands. All of you have been through all of you have been through a severe trial. You don't want to go through it again. But you've learned a lot. You've learned a lot. That's why we can count it joy, and it's from a matter of faith. It's a matter of faith. So when we doubt God, what we're really doing is not doubting the existence of God. We're not doing that doubting the mercy of God, the love of God. It may feel like that immediately, especially if we're more emotional in our response to things. What we're doing is, I learned this from a guy who wasn't in the church. He, forgive me, have a drink. He wanted me to do something, I don't know, and I said no. And he just kept insisting. And so I told him, no, just, drop it. I'm not interested. And he was a friend, so he kind of said, just don't do that. He says, that doesn't offend me at all. He's a professional salesman. He says, when people say no to me, that tells me they don't have enough information, so I'll give them some more information. So, and I said, well, when I say no, I mean no. I don't want any more information. I'm done with that. Okay, well, in a sense, when we are, quote, doubting, we're not saying God isn't loving. We're not saying we don't trust God. We're saying at my level, at this time in my life, where I'm at spiritually, this is a hard thing to go through. But I know God says count it all joy. Because, see, I've done some of the intellectual stuff, count it all joy. So I look up the word joy. Then I look up the word whatever that may be. But then I internalize it, and there comes the emotional part. So really, the two together work for our good. But we can't let one dominate the other. So we start looking at it, and what we're doing now is when we go through the Word, we're saying, I want some more information. That's the word what doubt really should be thought of. We're saying to God, I need more information. I don't understand this. I don't understand this. So again, it's not that you don't trust God. It's not that you don't love God. We've all been there. And if you haven't, you will. You've been somewhere where it's just a bone-crushing trial. And you think, how could this happen? What is going on here? Okay, that's the emotional part. Or like if the engineer type guy, well, okay, I got this tumor here. I'm going to go here. I'm going to go here. I'm looking at that's what it says right there in the word there. Okay. But either way, we all will come to that same conclusion. I'm sure many of you have experienced this, a loved one who has a terminal illness. And there's a process of mourning that you go through, anger, denial, so forth, all the way to acceptance. So you start off emotionally, in this case, and come to acceptance. That, okay, this is it. I understand that. I've done my homework. I'm this, and I'm ready. So there's a process spiritually that goes all along the same way. So when you're in a trial, and it just seems like, oh, man, I'm alone in this. I feel so alone. You're not. You're going through an experience that others have gone through. And the whole point is that God is allowing us to go through a maturing process. So let's go back now with these thoughts in mind in verse 2, James 1 and verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy. Hopefully now you can say, why? Because God is going to do something through this trial to help me to grow in character that I'll take with me to eternity. So count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Knowing, that's faith, isn't it? Knowing that this testing of your faith, it's a test of your faith. There are lifted weights. I'm like Winston Churchill in that matter. He always said when the urge to exercise came upon him, he'd sat down and have a cigar and wait for the feeling to pass. I don't have a cigar, but anyway, what he would do, not Winston Churchill, but when we lift weights, have you ever done that? And the next day, your muscles are sore, right? Because you work those muscles. Actually, as I understand, it's little bitty tears in the muscle, and they start to heal. And as they heal, I guess that begins to build a little bulk in your arms or wherever you're exercising. So there's some pain here. If you will, our faith is being exercised. Our faith is being exercised. And again, maybe some of you love doing this, where you lift weights till your arms are about to burst. No, thank you. Or you run 10,000 miles, and to where you can't even stand up anymore and you collapse in utter agony. I don't get that. But some people love, these long distance running things and the weightlifting. No, thanks. But, they're probably a lot healthier than I am. But I think you see the principle there. Principle is there to work out your faith, to put some stress on that faith so it deepens. God wants our faith in Him, our trust in Him, to deepen. And this is one of the methods that happens. One of the methods that happens. So the testing of your faith produces patience. What does patience imply? Time. It's going to take time. Okay, well, I'm all for learning from my trials, but can we do it in about 10 minutes? And God says, nope, you're going to wait. You're going to go through the experience. And while you're going through this exercise of faith, you'll have sore muscles from time to time. You'll be working on it. That's okay. And God says, we say, well, God, you knew that I loved you, but I was doubting you. Well, again, we're not doubting the existence of God. We're saying, give me some more information. And that's why we study. That's why we seek counsel. We want more information. Can you help me understand what God is doing here? We can say what God is, again, doing. I won't come exactly to mind that Paul says, in essence, when you compare the joys that are ahead of us, it makes our trials look like nothing. I butchered that, I know. I'll try to look it up. But anyway, so in comparison, he was saying our trials are nothing in comparison to what is waiting for us in the kingdom. Spirit beings. Won't that be nice to have spirit bodies? I'd like to have a spirit body that's like 25 years old again, you know. When you felt good and you were immortal. You thought you were anyway. So there we go. So this, it implies patience. It has produced patience. But there's something that patience is designed to do by God for us as we go through this. But allow or let patience have its, the word there is teleos. It's translated perfect here, but it, more correctly it means maturing. We're maturing in our faith as we go through our difficulties. Now, when I was a young man in my 20s, starting out in the ministry, I was strong and healthy and, you know, and I could give this sermon and it could be all correct and right. But in one sense, I didn't know what I was talking about because I hadn't experienced life at that level yet. But I could tell you about it. And the brethren, bless their hearts, they worked with a young, how many of you have a young minister who really hasn't been around long enough yet to really get all these experiences. But you know, he has got a good heart, he's working hard, and he's doing his job the best he can. But then 20 or 30 years down the line, guess what? His faith has been tested in various sundry ways. And if he or his family allows this process to go as it's designed to go, he and his wife should be more mature. They could come and they say, you're going through a severe trial. They can put your arm around you and say, been there, done that. Or been almost been there, almost done that. I know what it's like, you know, to lose a baby or to go through, lose a loved one, this type of thing, because you've experienced it. You've experienced it. So there's the essence here of time. And time has a perfecting work. I believe the Greek there is ergo, or work. It has a job, if you will. That you may be mature, better translation, and complete, lacking nothing. That's the goal. We want to lack nothing spiritually. But God won't allow anything to happen to us as far as the ending of our lives until he's finished the work that he's begun in us. Remember that verse? I think it's in the same book. So God is alive and working in our lives through our trials and through our blessings. But trials are a blessing too. I'm trying to show you if we keep in mind what the end goal of it is. The end goal of it. Is it fun going through it? Absolutely not. But it's a process that we all go through. With different types of trials, different things, but still, it's a process that God is bringing us through, and we're growing in our faith. Okay, now if you don't know what to do, you don't have the knowledge that you need. Let's look, here's a little bit of the intellectual part. That's probably not the right word or word. Intellectual or, where did I go? Well, anyway, what you're thinking here is knowledge or wisdom. Verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom as you approach this due trial, whatever it is, and you're lacking wisdom, let him ask God. There's the first source you want to go to. You're asking God for the wisdom, the knowledge, to go through whatever you're going through, because you know that all things work for the good of those who love the Lord, who have been called and so forth and so on. You know that. But knowing it at this moment, when I hurt emotionally or physically, it's hard to keep my focus. Well, let's go to God. He says, and seek it out. Go to Psalms. Go to Proverbs. Study the Hebrews 11, where it says this person went through that. Then go back and look in the Old Testament. You'll find a lot of their lives mentioned in there, how they went through things. Verse 5, if any lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach. In the word reproach there really means without accusation, if I can use that word lightly. In other words, God isn't going to say, you've been in the church 40 years and you come to me with this question, I can't believe you don't get it yet. No, he says, no, I've been waiting for you to get to this point. Welcome, and here's what you need. So you read through the scripture, and then all of a sudden, I imagine all of us at that would be looking and go, whoa, there it is. I've read right over it 1,000 times. But it wasn't time for you to see it. See? It wasn't time for you to see it. But now you do. And God said, there's the wisdom you've asked me for. Or you seek the counsel of someone who's been there, done that kind of thing, and an older person who's experienced life, that kind of thing. Okay? Because it gives liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. So when you pray about it, you say, Father, that's what you said. I believe you. But you'll have to help my unbelief. You'll have to help not my doubt that I don't believe in you, but I need more information. You might say, help my lack of information is the title. But I really need more information to help me to grow as you intended me to go through this trial. And you told me to be thankful, and it's hard, but I'm going to be thankful. Because through this all, I am going to learn an important thing. So I'm overcoming the emotion of the moment, right? And getting into more, okay, this is what God says, this is what we're going to do. We all did that one way or the other when you found out about Sabbath. Maybe you fought that knowledge, unless you were raised in the church, you grew up with it, but follow me here. And then you went and you studied it, like Mr. Armstrong did, and you go, oh. You studied it, you go, oh boy, I didn't know that, but now I do. Now what am I going to do with it? You know the words, many are called, but few are chosen? Why are many called? Because few will be chosen. Who are the ones going to be chosen? The ones who respond to the call. Probably 99% of the people who have been called, invited, that's what the word call means, they've been invited to God's way, they talk themselves out of it. They're invited, but they don't accept the call, and they're not chosen because they didn't accept the call. Okay? And it's just sort of a way of looking at that from that angle here. Now this guy, James Burns in his book wrote this. This is from his book, Challenging, wherever it was, I forget now. Oh, Doubting My Faith. Quote, these emotional doubters ask for emotional hurt from a position of emotional hurt or grief. They're not easily satisfied with intellectual answers. Why did I lose my job? That's one. Why is God allowing this to happen to me? Can I translate that? Not always for every person, but sometimes when we say, why is God allowing this to happen to me? The truth is we're saying it's not just, I've tried to obey you and this is happening to me. I shouldn't have to go through this. And it's okay to say that and go, oh, you know, I was wrong. That's not everybody does that, but if you're, some folks will say, yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. I didn't think I deserved it. No, we're not going to get what we deserve. We're thankful for that. Because we're under the grace and the blood of Christ, so we're not going to get the justice we deserve. He did that for us. So, now again, neither approach is wrong. It's basically a matter of personality, the kind of background and upbringing that you came from. It don't matter personality. I've written in my notes here, I'm going to read it to you because I thought it was pretty profound. I can't say it without writing it down. I got to write it down so that I can remember it. A profound moment. In fact, doubt can be a natural response to the challenges we face. It's important to remember that doubt is not the absence of faith, but rather a part of our spiritual workout. I don't think I wrote that, but it was on my computer through my fingers. It's a spiritual workout. And boy, some days you wake up and your old muscles are sore spiritually because you've gone through a hard workout. But you sit down with a cup of coffee or something and you think, wow, I sure didn't know what that meant, but now I do. And God is saying, good. And you'll take that with you into eternity, that wisdom and that trust and faith. And when people come to you during the millennium and beyond, they're going to come to you and say, wow, I've gone through this, I've gone through that. And you say, I know, I've been there. I've done that. And there's a way out of it. And they say, well, what? I can't see it. They say, well, I've experienced that. So did Christ. Remember he learned from the things that he suffered? And so you can be sympathetic. Yeah, we have a high priest who can sympathize with us, and we can be priest under him to sympathize with people. See, the new kind of leadership, isn't it? Not like we see in the world today. So again, James 1 talks about joy and trials, knowing and testing. We talked about that. And then that testing produces patience, and that patience has a perfect maturing work in our lives. It's a maturing work in our lives. We went on to verse 5, if you lack wisdom, well, then ask God about it, and he will give it to you liberally without reproach. Some of the modern translations make it a little clearer. We'll read that here in a little bit. He's not going to say, why don't you know this by now? You've been to church for 30 years and you asking me this, you dummy? No, he won't do that. He may, I'm just talking out loud here, he may say, well, I've been waiting for you to get here. Welcome, and I'll help you through this, and you're going to grow. So that's why I can count it all joy, because I'm going to grow through this process. So we ask in faith, and we don't doubt, verse 6. But, you know, because we'd be like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed. You know, you've been out at sea or in a big lake, and the wind is blowing back and forth. Wherever the wind is blowing, the sea, it goes. And he says, we don't want to be that, or we're double-spirited. It's a better translation. We have a double mind, a double spirited. I believe, but no, I don't know. And so, and he says that they become unstable in all your ways. And here's the modern translation. I believe it's the New Living Translation. Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when you endure it fully developed, so when your endurance is fully developed, you will be mature and complete, needing nothing. And through our lifetime, it's a whole process, isn't it? It's a whole process that God's taking us through. I remember back when we were, I think it was Mississippi, something like that, an elderly lady, she was getting up in age at that point. She had a rare kind of cancer that was in her spine, and the doctors gave her no hope at all. She got on some diet, I don't know what it was, and I'll be, if she didn't live like a year past what anybody thought she was doing fine. A really, really strict diet. And again, I have no idea what it was. And then she had an ulcer burst, and they gave her intravenous blood. And for that time, she just went down and died through a short order. Okay? And she says, because I got that dirty old blood. Well, her idea of this, she says, you know, my family is afraid of death. They don't know the truth. But she says, I'm okay with it. She says, I need a new body. She says, my body is wore out. And I just need a new body. So she asked if I'd be there when she dies so that her family at least, you know, someone's there. Because they're terrified of death. And when her time came, they ran out of the room. And of course she passed away. But she was at total peace. It took time for her to get to that point. And again, God says, okay, I've finished the work that I've begun in you to whatever level God wants. Now you're ready, and I'm going to take you into eternity. You know, from their perspective, at the moment she passed away, Christ came back. There was no time. You know that. Excuse me. So, as we go through these trials, keep in mind that they happen to everybody in life. Have you ever known someone who's not in the church and you just admire them for their strength and their ability to endure, and you think, boy, these people put me to shame. One lady, sorry to bore you with all these stories, but anyway, one lady, before she was called, her husband was killed in an accident. And her daughter was killed in a house fire after that. And several other things happened to her. And her attitude, just before she was called, was beautiful. I thought to myself, I'm sitting here and I'm supposed to be talking to her about faith? So, you know, God kind of smacked me in the face with that one. Because she has a beautiful attitude. And she died with that attitude. Later becoming converted and so forth and growing into the areas of her life. But there's something about her that was indomitable. You know, it was a real blessing for her. All right. Well, let's take a look. I've done what I normally do. I get off my notes and I have no idea where I'm at. Again, from this modern translation, if anyone needs wisdom, ask our generous God, this is from the New Living Translation, and he will give it to you, and he will not rebuke you for asking. But when you ask, and be sure that you ask in faith. You're saying, I need more information, please. You're not saying, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in you anymore. There's a type of lack of faith in that way. Where people say, well, okay, I used to believe in God, but I don't anymore because this, that, or that happened in my life. So if there's a God, he's going to have to really just prove himself to me. Well, that's a totally different story. That's a totally different story. Do not waver, for a person who's divided loyalty is unsettled as a wave of the sea that is blown to and tossed. Such people should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Their loyalty is divided between God and the world, and they're unstable in everything they do. Again, that'd be James 1, verse 2 through 8. Doubt, then, can lead us to a deeper and more meaningful faith. I'm going to talk about doubt. I don't mean it in the typical way that we think about it. It is designed to say, I don't understand. Can you give me more information? We can put that brackets doubt. I don't understand. Help me to understand more deeply. Help my unbelief. And again, it's through wrestling with our lack of knowledge and understanding or doubts that we can find answers, seek guidance, and ultimately strengthen our relationship with God, because that's what it's ultimately designed to do. Remember, you come, you go through a grieving process when you find you're terminally ill, this type of thing. Or a loved one is, you go through a process, and in the end, okay, I'm ready. And I'm not afraid. I've gone through the whole gamut, and God says, that's okay. Now, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, but I'll raise mine. How many of you been, again, don't raise your hand. How many of you have ever been angry with God? We all have. And that anger is still saying, I love you, and I know you're right, and I know your word is right, but I lack knowledge. Will you help me to understand? And that's really what God says. He says, oh, yeah. First of all, go read my word. Get a little bit of that intellectual bit out of the way. You're going through the emotional side of it, okay. Then you'll go through a process, and I'll bring you through it, and you will, at the end, you will be lacking nothing. You'll be ready. Become a member of the family of God as a spirit being. So we look at that and we go, wow. I think our trials of this present time are nothing to be compared. Now I'm remembering that verse. There's nothing to be compared with the, help me. With the glory. Here it is. Set before us. Well, that's pretty good. I remember everything with one word. Okay, good. And Paul isn't saying, those trials are nothing. He's saying, compare it. Wow. And again, then we take that with us, and when we start helping human beings who are hurting, we'll be compassionate, understanding, see, because of what we've been through. So what we're going through, whatever it may be, it's worth it. I don't like mine. You don't like yours. But ask God. Say, I'm lacking understanding here. I'm lacking understanding. I don't doubt you, God. I don't understand the trial, and I need your help. Give me more information. Again, the Bible records all kinds of people who have experienced life. Let's go to Hebrews 11, verse 4. We'll just cover there real quick. Hebrews 11. And this here we're talking about, obviously, people of faith, even in the Old Testament, there are people of faith, deep, convicted faith. For example, verse 4, By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, and it cost him his life. That was a pretty heavy trial. Though which he obtained witness that he was righteous. God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead still speaks. We just spoke about his example. His life was pretty short, but we learned about his example. He was willing to die and had to die for what he believed and what he did. And God is saying, I honor that. Obviously, there's other things in his life that God liked as well. And you can go down through here, people like Noah. Okay, you're going, remember, what is his name? I think it was Bill Cosby years and years ago did a little comedy act about Noah and the ark. And, you know, here's the voice, God says, Noah, this is God. And Mary goes, right. I don't know if you remember that or not. And pretty soon God says, I want you to build an ark. Right, you know. Well, the point was, this didn't make any sense. When he built the ark and he endured terrible persecution and ridicule, but he believed God. And in the end, he was really blessed for it. So there's just other situations. You can put your name in there and others that you know have been good examples over the years were there to help us to learn these examples. So, Philippians 2, verse 27. We're back into Philippians again. I'll read from the New English Translation. New English Translation. Paul himself was talking about the trials that he was going through, and he had a companion with him who had become deathly ill. He was going to die unless God healed him. And we'll catch the thought right here in the middle of verse 27. For he who was sick, that he was on at the point of death, says in this translation. But God took pity on him, and not only on him, but on me too. He kept me from having one sorrow after another. God was merciful to me. He was going through some gut-wrenching trials of his own, and God showed him mercy. Okay, this is your dearly friend that's been helping you. You know, and it has to be frustrating when God used Paul to heal a lot of people, and here's a dearly close friend of his who's dying, and I know they prayed over him, and he's still dying, and God says, okay, I will heal this guy because Paul is going through a lot right now. All right. Now, First Corinthians 10, verse 13. This is one we often quote when we are in an emotional state facing our trial. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. Again, New English Translation. No trial has overtaken you that is not faced by others. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tried beyond what you're able, but with the trial. We keep thinking that verse means I'll take the trial away. Doesn't say that. He will not let you be tried beyond what you're able to bear, but as you go through the trial, will also provide a way out that you may be able to endure it. What is that way out? We've been talking about part of that. Prayer, study, reminding ourselves what God has said, seeking more information, grabbing onto that information, continue to live your life in faith and confidence despite what you see, feel. See? Faith is substance of things hoped for. See? Another one. This is another definition of faith towards the end of it. Romans 8, verse 18. I'll start there and then just to get a little flow of the context here, and then we'll pick it up to where I really want to emphasize it. Again, New Living Translation. And we believers also groan, even as though we have the Holy Spirit within us, as a foretaste of the future glory. For we long for our bodies to be released, from sin and suffering, from our physical state. Okay, so Romans 8, verse 18. And he draws the analogy here that nature is groaning as in labor. In other places, he talks about that. Women who've had labor, you groan when you're in labor. I've known two ladies who don't. I don't know what happened to them. One lady, she didn't have any labor pain. She said she'd get a little gas, and here was a baby. Another lady said she got a little weak in the knees, and here was a baby. All the other women in the church didn't like them. No, I'm kidding. But the only two women I know, they had no pain in delivery. Amazing. Had a lot of kids. So anyway. Where we go? We too wait with eager hope and anticipation for the day when God will give us our full rights as his sons. In sonship is a better translation there than adopted, including the new bodies as he promised us. How many of you want a new body? I'll raise my hand on that one. See, as you get older, you kind of think, oh, okay. The legs aren't doing what they used to do. The back sure isn't what it used to be. And now you begin to feel that when you can't open a bottle, you know, take a lid off. I used to really, when I was young, my wife couldn't open a bottle, so I'd give it to me, you know. She gives me the bottle, I go, you know, finally you get it open. Well, you know, time is the great leveler, isn't it? The great leveler. But anyway, so we're looking forward to a new body. Is that not faith? Is that not faith? So when we're physically racked in pain or mentally enduring trials and tests that way, I know God has something so great for us that as I go through this and seek more information so that my faith will grow, wow, I'm going to take this into eternity. I'm not just trying to get into the kingdom of God for my sake. Of course, I want to, but I want to help others when they come. We were given this hope, the last part of that, we were given this hope when we were saved or when we converted. Then he says in this is a kind of another way of saying what faith is. If we already have something, we don't need to hope for it. If you had a spirit body right now, you wouldn't need to hope for a spirit body. You got it. But if we look forward to something we don't yet have, we must wait patiently and in confidence. That's faith, waiting patiently and in confidence. Despite what you see, what you feel. And again, when these difficulties come on us, we want to go back and get more information. Because I have faith, but I need help with my faith. Right? I need more understanding. I need more information. And God will give it to you liberally if you ask. He'll give it to you liberally if we ask. So again, in conclusion, doubting God during times of difficulties and trials is not an indication of lack of faith, but is a normal part of our spiritual journey, if you will, a catalyst for growth and understanding. It's a catalyst for growth and understanding. It's during these moments of uncertainty that we learn our faith. We lean on our faith. We seek solace, yes, and ultimately find strength in our relationship with God as we go through these trials. I'll finish here reading to you from the TCENT translation. Frankly, I forget what it stands for, but it's a translation. Therefore, let us draw near to the throne of grace with confidence, faith, assurance, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need.